Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Nama Om Vishnu Bhavatam. We're jumping out of order today because I was given VIP privilege to pick whatever verse I wanted to talk about. So, so I went back to first canto, which is a little more familiar territory. This is first canto, second chapter, text number 7. Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janayati Ashu Vairagyam Gyanam Chayad Ahaitukam Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janayati Ashu Vairagyam Gyanam Chayad Ahaitukam. Translation. By rendering devotional service unto the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna, one immediately acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from the world. I'd like to repeat one time. By rendering devotional service unto the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna, one immediately acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from the world. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Those who consider devotional service to the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna to be something like material emotional affairs may argue that in the revealed scriptures, sacrifice, charity, austerity, knowledge, mystic powers, and similar other processes of transcendental realization are recommended. According to them, bhakti, or the devotional service of the Lord, is meant for those who cannot perform the high-grade activities. Generally, it is said that the bhakti cult is meant for the Shudras, Vaishyas, and the less intelligent woman class. I was really hoping to avoid this issue today, but there it is, staring me in the face. But that is not the actual fact. Let me repeat that sentence. That is not the actual fact. The bhakti cult is the topmost of all transcendental activities, and therefore it is simultaneously sublime and easy. It is sublime for the pure devotees who are serious about getting in contact with the Supreme Lord, and it is easy for the neophytes who are just on the threshold of the house of bhakti. Isn't that a lovely phrase? On the threshold of the house of bhakti. Prabhupada's poetry. To achieve the contact of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Sri Krishna is a great science, and it is open for all living beings, including the Shudras, Vaishyas, women, and even those lower than the low-born Brahmanas and the great, the low-born Shudras. And so what to speak of the high-class men like the qualified Brahmanas and the great self-realized kings? The other high-grade activities designated as sacrifice, charity, austerity, etc., are all corollary factors. They are corollary factors following the pure and scientific bhakti cult. Srila Prabhupada's purport continues, "The principles of knowledge and detachment are two important factors on the path of transcendental realization. The whole spiritual process leads to perfect knowledge of everything material and spiritual, and the results of such perfect knowledge are that one becomes detached from material affection and becomes attached to spiritual activities." Becoming detached from material things does not mean becoming inert altogether, right? As men of poor fund of knowledge think. Becoming detached doesn't mean becoming irresponsible, okay? Naishkarma means not undertaking activities that will produce good or bad effects. Negation does not mean negation of the positive. Very important principle. Negation does not mean negation of the positive. Just as sometimes we say God is without features. That's negation of material features. It doesn't mean that it negates his spiritual features. Similarly, detachment from material forms does not mean nullifying the positive form. The bhakti cult is meant for realization of the positive form. When the positive form is realized, the negative forms are automatically eliminated. Therefore, with the development of the bhakti cult, with the application of positive service to the positive form, one naturally becomes detached from inferior things and becomes attached to superior things. Similarly, the bhakti cult being the supermost occupation of the living being, supermost occupation, leads him out of material sense enjoyment. That is the sign of a pure devotee. He is not a fool, nor is he engaged in the inferior energies, nor does he have material values. This is not possible by dry reasoning. It actually happens by the grace of the Almighty. In conclusion, one who is a pure devotee has all other good qualities, namely knowledge, detachment, etc. But one who has only knowledge or detachment is not necessarily well acquainted with the principles of the bhakti cult. Bhakti is the supermost occupation of the human being. Jai Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna. Translation again. By rendering devotional service unto the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna, one immediately acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from the world. First of all, I am so honored to be here with you. Thank you very much. My name is Yogeshwar Das. I come from New York. Please don't hold that against me. And I've been hearing about this wonderful Radha Gopinath Chaupati Temple for so many years. It's been driving me crazy. I wanted to come and finally see it. And now, not only do I see that everything I've heard about it is true, but it surpasses all of the rumors. So thank you, thank you, thank you for your wonderful services here to the beautiful deities and to Radhanath Maharaj. Thank you so very much. This is one of the core verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the very, very important verse. By rendering service unto the personality of Godhead, one immediately acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from the world. When we were younger, detachment from the world meant something a little different. We didn't handle it very well. In those early days, the idea of being detached meant, now I'm a spiritual person. I don't have a family anymore. I don't have any responsibilities anymore. That's a very juvenile understanding of detachment. Detachment, in its true sense, it's actually it's a great existential tension. How to be detached, but also give yourself 100% to what you're doing. By the way, it's wonderful to see you all so involved in this. Is like being in the forest of Vrindavan here with all these flowers. It's so beautiful. Anyway, yes, this is difficult, especially those of you who are married or those of you who have children. You know, there's this tension. How, you know, you have to give your love 100% to your family. And at the same time, there's this injunction to be detached, right? That's a very, very difficult thing to do. Very, very difficult thing to do. You don't have to be married to have that experience. Even whatever your service may be, you know, to be attached to that service. And then also thinking, but I'm also supposed to do this other thing, you know, finish my rounds and read the books. And so there's always this tension going on. So that's reconciled. Here the purport, Prabhupada gives the hint here. He says, this is not possible by dry reasoning. It actually happens by the grace of the Almighty. To be able to give yourself 100% to your service, to your family, to your loved ones, the people who depend on you, and also to be giving yourself 100% to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Sri Radha Krishna. How do you do that? How do you give yourself 100% in two different places? So I was with Prabhupada. As soon as I can segue into a story about Prabhupada, I love doing that. Those of us who were there, who had the blessing of Prabhupada's company, we take that responsibility very seriously to pass along to you what it was like to be with him. So, I'll sit and talk with you about Prabhupada all day long if you like. At Bhaktivedanta Manor, 1973, I think it was, we were sitting out in the backyard just chanting japa with Srila Prabhupada. Wonderful thing, just sitting there chanting with him. Maybe six or seven of us, and Prabhupada sitting on his cushion, chanting. He was chanting on his beads. You know, when he chanted japa, it was very low voice. You know, it's a very deep voice. So I didn't want to disturb him, but I was a little bit... I took liberties with Prabhupada. I was always asking him outrageous questions. And he always was very, very patient. So I said, let's say, Srila Prabhupada, let's say that there's 10 people sitting here and all of them are equally unqualified for devotional service. None of them has any particular qualification. And yet over the course of time, one of them becomes a devotee and the others don't. Why is that? He looked at me like you rascal. Just shaking his head like this. He said, don't try to find a formula for causeless mercy. It's causeless. He said, ultimately, it's up to the mercy giver. You know? So, of course, we can qualify ourselves by being sincere and dedicating ourselves 100% to our service. But there's a mystery. There's a wonderful mystery to Krishna consciousness, and that is the dimension of the Almighty's grace, the grace that descends that we do not qualify for. You know, how is it that we're here? How many people in Bombay? Mumbai. How many people in Mumbai? How many? 20 million people? All right. So here's a few hundred people. You know. So why is it that we have been blessed that we're here? You know, that's causeless mercy. It's not that we have some high-grade qualification. Here Srila Prabhupada says, in the beginning of the purport, that according to those who consider devotional service to be less important, bhakti is meant for those who cannot perform the high-grade activities. You know, that reputation came ultimately from the time of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when the Sankirtan movement would go out, you know, Lord Nityananda Mahaprabhu would go out, and they would accept everybody. Everybody was welcome, you know. And so the smarter Brahmins got very upset about that, because it was, you know, defying their authority, you know, by birthright that they had. They're in the lineage, they get to hold the power. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, no, everyone, who knows the verse, all living beings are by nature servants of Krishna, and by Jivera Surupa Hoy Niter Krishna Das. Yeah. Amar. So look it up and we'll... All living beings are by nature servants of Krishna. But the social structure was such that people who were not born into Brahminical standing, Brahminical family, were considered excluded from the rituals, from the reciting the mantras, and so on. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu just did away with all of that, and he embraced everyone. So not everybody who came to the bhakti community had a very high education. So from that time, there was this idea that, oh, well, it's for, you know, the less intelligent class of people, when actually it's for the most intelligent. Here Srila Prabhupada ends this purport. Bhakti is the supermost occupation of the human being. So it's the very highest calling. So how is it if causeless knowledge and detachment from the world come as soon as we begin chanting Hare Krishna, we take to devotional service? Why is it that so often we feel, I'm not making any progress, I'm not progressing? First of all, where does it come from? That's the first question that a thoughtful person will ask. Acquires, if I do service, if I render service, I acquire causeless knowledge and detachment. So we know where that comes from. That comes from Super Soul within the heart and from the spiritual master and the scriptures. So just to talk a moment about Super Soul in the heart, because this is a subject that fascinates me deeply, deeply, deeply fascinated by this subject of Paramatma. Ishvara sarva bhutanam hridayeshu arjuna tishtati, that I am within your heart. I've done a little bit of study on this, and in the Bhagavad Gita, out of 700 verses, at least 30 verses are dedicated to explaining Supersoul. So Krishna, if you think about the dialogue between them taking place maybe 2 hours, 2.5 hours, so every 10 minutes or so, Krishna is saying, don't forget, I'm in your heart. I'm in your heart. I will never leave you. I love you. I will never leave you. I am in your heart. Whatever you need, I'm providing it. You don't have to worry. So there's this constant reassurance that all the tools that you need to progress in your Krishna consciousness, they are there within you. You're not missing something. There's nothing that you're lacking. We need to recognize those tools. Sometimes it's like, it's called the purloined letter. You know, sometimes it's there on the desk and you don't even see what you're looking for. We forget sometimes that Krishna is in our hearts. And I remember one time Prabhupada saying that if you're ever in anxiety, anxiety means thinking that something can take place outside Krishna's control. The only reason anxiety occurs is that you forget that Krishna is there in your heart and everything is taking place under his direction. Right? So this causeless knowledge and detachment from the world are inspired from within us by Supersoul. They're inspired without by the spiritual master and by the shastras, by the teachings. And yet, even though we know this intellectually, still we find ourselves sometimes up against this blockage. You know, I'm not making enough spiritual progress. I have these attachments. I'm still confused about things. So I've tried to understand a little bit about that. And I find that there are some parallels between bhakti theology and principles of contemporary psychology as well. Because the karmic consequences of previous lives' activities are not just in the form of physical ailments or legal problems or some other kind of distress. But they also come in these kinds of psychic obstacles, these impressions that we have of ourselves that stop us from making more rapid spiritual advancement. Let me give you an example. Let's say, for instance, that I studied with a psychologist in New York for a while, and she described one of her clients was a very famous composer. And she brought him to speak to some of her students. She taught at Columbia University. She passed away now. Her name was Martha Friedman. And she wrote a book called How to Overcome the Fear of Success. Now, people say, wait a minute. Nobody's afraid of success. People are afraid of failure. No. You think about this for a minute. Right, because we're talking about our spiritual progress and how sometimes we may even be afraid of making that spiritual progress. So she brought this one client to her classroom, very famous composer, and he said, Martha didn't know I was going to tell you this, he told her students, but don't believe anything she tells you. He says, there's no such thing as a fear of success. My worst song won an Oscar nomination. I love being a big success. Everything I do is success. So one of the students said, did you always want to be a songwriter, a composer? He said, no, actually, when I was younger, I wanted to be a piano player. I wanted to just play piano. So the question was, why didn't you do that? He said, well, I came from a poor family. My parents didn't have any money. And there was just more money writing songs. I could sell my songs and make better money. So then one of the students said, but now you're a big success. Why don't you stop writing songs now and go back to being what, follow your dream. Why don't you become a pianist? And he kind of hesitated and got a little embarrassed and said, well, you know, whenever I try to do that, somehow mysteriously, I always burn my fingers. Okay, mysteriously burn my fingers. That's like saying somehow I mysteriously got pregnant, you know, or somehow mysteriously I got overweight, you know, or something. This is a self-sabotaging kind of behavior. And it's because we actually don't think that we deserve to get something. You see? In his mind, he's thinking that if I become that piano player, my parents will suffer because they were poor. And I could only give them money by becoming a songwriter. So I don't deserve to do what I wanted to do. Right? Or let's take another example. young girl, young boy, a child is healthy, but the parents are always fighting at home, always arguing back and forth. So one day the parents get a phone call from the teacher saying that, you know, your daughter is having problems with reading. She has a reading disability. What happens? The parents stop fighting because they have to pay attention to their underachieving daughter. Now, maybe the child has no reading difficulties at all, but she's thinking that if I have this problem, then my parents will stop fighting and they'll pay attention to me. So sometimes a child will actually fail at school in order to have a peaceful situation at home, to deflect that anger between the parents at home. Right? Or I can give you another example. If let's say that you were a very good student when you were in school, but your father had very low self-esteem. Your father didn't think much of himself. So if you did something good in school, and then you went to your father, and then you said, look, I got this very good grade on my test or whatever, you were in sports or something, and the father responds with silence. There's no acknowledgement of what good you've done. What will you do to get that father's attention? You'll fail. You'll fail. You'll consciously fail, because then at least you'll get his attention. He'll scold you. Why aren't you doing better? So these are the workings of the subconscious mind when we think we don't deserve something. And it's a kind of karmic residue. This is part of the karmic residue, and I'm signaling this to you because I've done a little bit of study of this, and it's important to understand what it is that stops us from making more progress in our Krishna consciousness. Or let's take another example. Maybe it's difficult for you to make friends. Now, why would it be difficult for you to make friends? Well, because maybe you're thinking, you know, if they really get to know me, they're not going to like me. So you have very low self-esteem. You know, in Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna had very low self-esteem. And what did Krishna do? He's like a good therapist, you know. He starts off by saying, all right, now let's take this one step at a time. First of all, are you your body? You know, he starts chapter 2, very, very simple things. Let's start from the beginning. Let's distinguish now who you are, and you're different from the body and mind. Now your mind is troubling you. Now we have to just move away from that. And now, then later, he starts calling him now mighty armed, Mahabahu, you know, the winner of wealth, you know, all these wonder. He's bolstering his self-confidence so that eventually he can pick up his bow and arrows and get back in the battle. Okay? So sometimes we're a little bit like that as well. We have low self-esteem, and we need some self-confidence, you know. So this happens. It's, again, a karmic residue. Or another example is if a child of alcoholic parents. I don't know about here, but in America, this is a frequent thing, that the parents are suffering from alcoholism. So the child is thinking, you know, it's my fault. It's my fault. If I had been a better child, they wouldn't have had to drink so much. You take that guilt on your own shoulders. In my own work with Holocaust survivors, I hear often stories that, you know, in the camps, in the concentration camps, the propaganda against them was so harsh that they really began to feel that they're less than human. And there's one woman I know who talks about when she sets the table for the holiday feast, the Passover feast, she'll put beautiful plates and crystal goblets at everyone else's place, at her own place. She'll put paper plates and a paper cup. And it's unconscious. She's not even thinking about it. But when she realized her behavior, it's because she was thinking, yes, I'm not even a human being. Now, that propaganda was so heavy, was so strong. So we carry these conceptions around. So as long as we're in this confessional mode, I'll tell you what my psychic burden is. I'm thinking, oh, they always say I give such nice classes, you know. And then, but if they really knew me, they would understand I'm not a very advanced devotee, and then they would know the truth about me. You know? In the back of my head, that thought is there. So we carry these things around with us. So how do we come out from underneath that psychic conditioning, that karmic conditioning? Here's the verse that explains it. By rendering devotional service unto the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, One immediately acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from the world. By coming to know our true self, by moving away from this false conception of who we are, by understanding the beauty of the nature of the soul, that the soul is part and parcel of Krishna, those psychic impediments can be overcome. I remember one time, Prabhupada in a class one time, he said, "You may be Rockefeller, you may be any feller." So sometimes this psychic conditioning is one of superiority, like I'm in a very prestigious position, All right, now I have to deal with this. I didn't want to have to. The verse that was for today was also dealing with, the Varnashram system. So I was thinking, okay, I'll pick a different verse and I won't have to deal with this. But here it is. It says, to achieve the contact of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Sri Krishna is a great science, and it is open for all living beings, including the Shudras, Vaishyas, women, and even those lower than the low-born Shudras. So what to speak of the high-class men like the qualified Brahmanas? Let us be very clear about this. If you want to know, are women actually less intelligent than men? Go talk to any of these wealthy devotees here. What's the secret of their success? And they'll tell you, it's their wives. The real brains behind the successful men are their wives. And the great intelligence of women is that they know that men have the bigger ego, so they let them think it's their credit. You built the big business. Congratulations. Srila Prabhupada is upholding a tradition in his books. And he was very strict about it, and he would describe things just as it's there in Shastra. But he understood fully well that we preach according to where we are now today. And there was never, never, not for one moment, any question of inequality between men and women. So I'm sorry, I didn't think I was going to get into this, but I remember times when Prabhupada would leave the sannyasis standing outside the car so that he could have Yamuna or some of the other women devotees sit with him in the car if they were going someplace, or having them give class and so on and so forth. And I just hope there's no confusion about that. it's true. And Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, sometimes people ask, what about this purport? How do you explain that? Everything else is beautiful. What about this thing here? So I didn't want there to be any confusion about it. So are there any questions? Would you like to ask some questions? Yes, Prabhu. What's your name? Braj Mohan Das. Das. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Thank you, Prabhuji. Prabhuji, you mentioned giving 100% to family. Yeah. Can you please tell me, actually I have three questions which are related to each other. The first one is, what is really giving 100% to the family? And the second question is, what are the symptoms to look for that you are giving 100% to the family? Mm-hmm. And what are the symptoms to look for that you're not giving 100% to the family?
Yeah. Well, the last question is easiest. If your family's unhappy, then you're not giving 100%. That's easy. I've had to think about this very, very deeply myself, because my wife is not 100%, she's not in the devotional way. And so for many, we've been married now 23 years. And at first I was upset about that, did I make a big mistake or whatever? So I went inside myself and I prayed to Prabhupada and I said, please help me to understand. I don't want to give up. I don't think that's the kind of devotee you want me to be. I think you want me to make this work. You want me to solve this somehow. And it occurred to me that if our Krishna consciousness philosophy is real and true, then it's not something that can only work among ourselves. It's something that should be able to work with everybody. And if you're committed to someone, somehow or other you're in a relationship and you have that responsibility, you can't tell yourself, I will only love this person when this person evolves and becomes the kind of person that I would like this person to become. That's not love. That's very selfish, actually. Love means without any qualification. Ahoituki apritihata. That it's unqualified. That's the kind of love that Prabhupada came and gave us. He didn't say, I'll love you after you give up meat eating and after you give up all of your... Then I'll love you. He came and he loved us. He loved us. He cared so deeply. So I think it's a matter of seeing this with compassion, that these people who depend on me, they are just like me. They're conditioned souls struggling with the material nature. How can I not feel compassion and do everything in my power to serve them and to encourage them and to see that they are happy to the best of my ability? So no fault can be found in your behavior, that you are doing 100% everything possible. Then we can't always count on the outcome that we would like. But our job is to love people for who they are. Not someday they might become something, you know, more. It's hard. It's a difficult thing. You know, your question is a good question. I've been meditating on this for a long time. I joined Krishna consciousness in London. I was 19 years old. Now I'm 58, so it's almost 40 years. You know, and a few things I know. I know that chanting works. That I can tell you for certain. That I know. Chanting is so powerful and it's so beautiful and so sublime. If you just stick to that chanting, any questions like this that you have, if we don't have a chance to talk or you don't know where to go for the answer, you go to Krishna in your heart and offer him back his holy names. Go to Radha Gopinath and offer them back their holy names. All answers will be revealed. Here it is said, causeless knowledge. Offer that service, it will be revealed. That I can tell you for certain. And some things I don't know. I don't know how to make everybody devotee. I don't know even how to make my own family necessarily a devotee. But I know that this is my devotional service. So I accept that as part of my devotional service. I don't minimize it. So.
One more question, Prabhuji. What is that line you draw where you think about your own spiritual life as compared to your family's? What is that? You know, you feel compassionate to your family members and you want to give. But when is that time when you draw that line and you start thinking about your spiritual life? I mean,
you're making an artificial distinction between your family and your spiritual life. There's no distinction. If you approach what you're doing with the spirit of devotion, everything that you do is your devotional life. Everything you do is your spiritual life. That's God in the details. You know. We don't run away. I remember there was someone in the early days was telling, oh, Srila Prabhupada, when I chant Hare Krishna, it's so wonderful. I see colors and I see stars and I see lights. And Prabhupada said, that's all right, keep chanting, it'll go away. When you come to devotional life, you don't lose yourself, you find yourself. It means that everything that you're doing becomes your devotional life. Everything is important. I once sent Prabhupada a letter. I said, you know, Srila Prabhupada, I'm confused. I don't know. You've told me to do the BBT work for France. You've told me to be in charge of the Paris temple. You've asked me to go on Sankirtan. You've told me to do children's books. What should I do first? There's so much that you've asked me to do. He sent me back a letter. It's emblazoned in my mind, in my memory. He said, it's all important. Not that you should give up something because you have something else to do. He says, it's a question of your management skills. We have to learn how to do everything. That's our challenge, you know. And everything that we do, if it's done with that spirit of service to Radha Gopinath, then it's devotional service. There's no difference. There's absolutely no difference. Some other questions? Yes, Prabhu. What's your name?
My name is Sri Gauranga Das.
Sri Gauranga
Das.
Das, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Prabhuji, you mentioned about trying to realize that the super soul is there, and the super soul provides everything that is required, all the tools for making devotional progress. My understanding is that it also provides all the material tools. So, you know, how does one have that, you know, understanding and faith that it will also provide all the material tools? Because that's actually also a cause of anxiety for a lot of us. You know, some of us are okay, bother about devotional service, but some are also, some of us also think, you know, materially can we be successful in terms of whatever is required in the family or the society we stay in.
Yeah. So this is a recession question. Let me make a suggestion, if I may, and that is, don't do business with God. You can't ask for some guarantees like that. Now, yes, Krishna guarantees in the Bhagavad Gita that what you need, I will provide you. If you're lacking something, I will provide that to you. But we can't judge what that is. What we're thinking it is may be different from what he's thinking it is. And there are times that you just have to go through the hard fire of adversity to make spiritual progress, and there's just no way around that. What can you do? I remember Prabhupada was seeing some guests in Paris in 19, again, it was early 70s, and a couple came in, and they were very interested in Krishna consciousness. They wanted to stay with us in the temple for a while, an older couple. And Prabhupada said, so what is the problem? And they said, well, we have a son who is handicapped. And so we have to take care of him, and you know, we're concerned that if we bring him with us, we don't know if the facilities will work out all right. And Prabhupada was saying that you have to recognize your limitations. You know, what can you do? If your son, he said, is handicapped, and then he said, let's say even his hand is, he said, handicut. Handicapped, handicut. Can you restore his hand to him? No, we have limitations. We may not like it, you know. We'd like to think, no, I'm doing this service, I'm doing my puja, I'm doing my deity worship, I'm chanting my rounds, and still I'm not getting rich. That's doing business, you know. If you look at the history of Vaishnavas, most of them have been very poor, you know. Because it's said that if Krishna is very merciful, he takes everything away, and then what are you left with? You're left with them. So what more wealth do you need than that? Is there any greater wealth than Radha Gopinath? So of course we have to try. We have to try. And if Krishna sees fit, that's his will. If he, Krishna, if you wish to bestow upon me, what is that verse from Shikshastakam? Aslishtava padamitam pinashtumam adarshanam marmata kurotuva yadha yadha dad matpanana natas to say. I don't want anything. You just please give me your service. Then you're the wealthiest person in the world. The rest will come or not come, don't worry about it. Yes, yes, ma'am. Hare Krishna. But you have to try. Don't stop trying. Yes.
Thank you very much for the most beautiful lecture. Hey. All my questions are answered, but one is left.
Uh-oh. Now I'm in trouble.
I see Krishna in everyone. I love everyone, whether they are devotee or not. I try to give Krishna consciousness to my family at least, because they are very near to, dear and near to me. Nobody accepts it. No one. They are all non-devotees. If anybody has accepted that, my servant only. And my family people, no, they don't want to accept. I love them, I respect them, I give them good prasad, whatever it is. But they don't take my way of thinking, you know, or my way. They say, no, 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 it's too much for us. What should I do, Prabhuji? What should I do to bring them to Krishna consciousness?
It sounds to me like you're already doing it. You're offering them whatever service they are willing to take, even if it's just, I mean, prasadam is wonderful service that they're taking prasadam. And you're being the best example. You know, I think we get into trouble when we levy expectations on the results of our effort, you know. When we say, you know, Krishna, if I do this, then kindly do that for me. You know, then when there's those expectations, then we can get disappointed. This much we know from reading the stories of the great devotees, Jad Bharat and others. You can't judge people by the externals. You don't know. Maybe they're already great devotees by your kindness. Simply a little bit of time is separating from when you can see it. So be satisfied, be happy with what you're doing. By doing everything in your power and by offering prayers to the Lord that He kindly brings them to His lotus feet, your job is perfect. You've done perfect service. And no doubt they will come to devotional service. If there's a little bit of gap of time between now and then, that's no big deal. It's not so long to wait. So,
I apply this principle to all my dealings to everyone, Drina, the peer, whatever they say to Vaishnavas, I do to everyone. So my only contention is that they should at least come to temple, listen to lectures. No, they are very stubborn.
Give them time. Stubborn has no ability to withstand the beauty of Radha Gopinath. You just give them a little time. It'll happen. Just be patient.
Thank you very much.
Hare Krishna. Yes, Prabhu? Yeah, what's your name, Prabhu?
Anand Vrindavan Das. Anand Vrindavan Das.
Ananda Vrindavan Das. Wow. What a beautiful name. Hare Krishna. What's your question?
You are mentioning that you came into Krishna consciousness at the age of 19 years.
Yes.
And so from about 40 years you are in Krishna consciousness.
40 years trying to be in Krishna consciousness.
So, and you being a householder also, I wanted to know...
Trying to be a householder.
So, from last 39 to 40 years, there might be hardcore realization you might have got in the household life. After staying in Krishna consciousness, I will be very thankful if you can give some hardcore realization of household life, which you have realized it in your tenure after being in Krishna consciousness. What are the difficulties which is definitely going to come?
Radhanath Maharaj, why didn't you warn me about these devotees? You want to know what are my hardcore realizations? No, I'll take your question very seriously. Householder life, by definition, is a compromise. It's by definition a compromise. So, when you're in a compromised situation, there are times when you will feel great remorse, great humiliation. Sometimes, this is described by the Goswamis, these emotions are there. It'll happen also, even in chanting, sometimes you'll have these feelings of mortification, you know, that, my Lord, I've forgotten you. You know, how could I do that? I have no love for you. You know, these very, very deep feelings of, if you will, hardcore feelings, you know, that you get. So, as best I can tell you from my time with Srila Prabhupada and my discussions with him, forgive yourself. Just be, forgive yourself. Don't be so hard on yourself that you're always living with guilt. Prabhupada never wanted us to live with guilt. Guilt is a very toxic condition. Guilt and stress and those feelings of anxiety, very, very toxic conditions. And it'll affect your health. You can get poor health if you allow yourself to. So maintain strict discipline in your own life. For your own practices, maintain as strict a discipline as you can, all the while maintaining great compassion for your family members and those around you who may not be feeling the same way you are. You know, be patient with yourself also, as well as with them. You know that devotee in South India who met Lord Chaitanya, that householder? I said, please take me with you, my dear Lord. I just want to give all this up. It's too hardcore, you know. I don't want to be here with this. Please take me with you. And he said, don't be foolish. Do you know the Sanskrit verse, this Bengali verse that he said to him? You know, if you just speak wherever, whoever you meet, if you speak to them the message of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, I am with you. I am with you. You have my association. I am with you. I will never leave you. I will never leave you. So pray always to the Lord, you know, that He guide you how to behave properly. And don't neglect your family. Don't ever hold it against them that someone is not doing up to the right standard or something like that. You know, Radhanath Maharaj was speaking at that program the other night about how Krishna consciousness is all about relationships, how bhakti means relationships. That's everything. That's everything right there. That's at the core of everything. That loving relationship, that you care for other people. So that's one, if you will, a hardcore realization, is that I have to forgive myself for being in a compromised situation, and I also have to forgive my family members that were in a compromised situation, and we do the best we can. We do the best we can. And don't live with guilt. You go on and do your service.
There might be some stage that will come in our life where we are very disturbed. We are very, so to say, in anxiety. There is no solution working out. At that time, as you said, whenever I have a problem, I go to the holy name. That gives me lots of rescue. So can you tell us, other than the holy name, what other shelter you were taking just to keep yourself completely going on in your Krishna consciousness smoothly?
Okay. That's a good question. In my home, I have a little place. You know, my altar is there. And I get up in the morning, you know, before and everybody else, and I go in and I pray like crazy. You know, I chant my japa for me in the morning is a very emotional experience, I'll tell you quite honestly. That, you know, that those feelings of, you know, please guide me, please help me. So I make sure every day to start with that Krishna conscious foundation. You start with there. Start there. Don't let anything interfere with that. That's your time with Krishna, with Radha and Krishna. Just you take that time. And then, as far as possible, keeping company, association with devotees. That's all we have, is each other's association. All I have to save me from the pits of hell is you, Ananda Vrindavan Prabhu, your company. Thank you for your association. That's all I have. So, whenever possible, keep that association going, and give it to others. You know, imagine if you're feeling this way now. Okay. We're not so different from one another, right? If you're having that sense of, you know, hitting that wall, you know, feeling, I can't, you know, I'm in trouble now. Imagine how everyone else is feeling. You're not so different from everybody else. Everybody is feeling, my Lord, I'm such a bad devotee. So extend yourself to them. There have been studies made that by extending yourself to others, by doing that selfless service for others, what happens? First of all, you're not thinking about your own problems anymore. That's number one. Okay? Number two is you begin to feel good because you're helping somebody else feel good. So from having those bad feelings, now you're having some good feelings. Isn't it? So the quickest thing that you can do, apart from chanting, is think, how can I help somebody else? What service can I perform? And it's something magical about devotional service, that your problems, they somehow seem to, if they don't completely go away, they're certainly much less. You don't feel it as much. So engage in there. Here it says, by Vasudevi Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janayiti Asuvairagyam Jnanam Chayada Haitukam. Simply by engaging in devotional service unto the personality of God, Sri Krishna, immediately one acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from the word. The word in Sanskrit, ashu, means actually very soon. Very soon, very quickly. So if you're feeling bad and you want to change that, perform devotional service. You won't be meditating on your problems so much. Not to neglect them, you have to do something about whatever that may be, but you won't feel that pain and suffering as much. Is that okay? How are we coming with the flower plucking? Is there a lot more to go? Okay. Question? Where? Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji.
Jai. What's your name, please?
I am Chaitanya Charan Das.
Chaitanya Charan. Yes. Hare Krishna, Prabhu.
Prabhuji, you are talking about self-esteem, how Arjuna had a low self-esteem. Now, I wanted to know how much the concept of self-esteem is reconcilable with the Vaishnava understanding of humility, being humbler than a blade of grass. You also said that, you know, we should not feel guilty. But isn't an awareness of our past sins necessary for us to feel humble? Or how does the humility come about if we have self-esteem and if we also don't feel guilty? Then what is the basis of a devotee's humility?
Very good question. Let's start with the first part of your question about self-esteem. When we talk about, first of all, you understand that in Vaishnava theology, you're never egoless. There's no such thing. Egoless means devoid of material ego and fully aware of your spiritual ego, your spiritual self. You cannot destroy ego. That's the Mayavad philosophy. We understand that the soul is indestructible. What is the nature of that soul? That soul is part and parcel of Krishna. So the soul is reflecting all those beautiful qualities. So self-esteem means that awareness of ourselves as divine beings, that we are parts and parcels of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You cannot really understand that if you're also proud, because it's one that automatically stimulates humility. So self-esteem in the spiritual sense. Did you ever see Srila Prabhupada? He had the most regal bearing. He was magnificent. He held his head high. His posture was straight. His words were powerful and strong. There was such wonderful spiritual self-esteem there. But he was the most humble person in the universe. So that self-esteem means taking proper pride in knowing that I am part and parcel of the Supreme Lord and that I can be happy, that I can serve Him in that capacity. So self-esteem is not the same thing as ego esteem, you know, material ego. It's not the same thing. Then so far as how do we cultivate Vaishnava humility if, I don't remember exactly how you phrased your question.
I was saying that should we feel guilty about our past misdeeds?
Yeah.
Is that guilt the basis of our humility or what
else? Not guilt. We should be aware of them. And we should take very seriously that such things should not be perpetuated, that we should not behave in such a way again as to keep us away from Radha and Krishna. But guilt is a different thing. Guilt, in a sense, is a kind of sense gratification. Guilt can be an excuse for not doing what you should be doing. Oh, I'm so How can I cannot, you know. I remember one time Prabhupada came back from a morning walk in Los Angeles, and he would come out of the car and all the devotees would line up leading to the steps to the temple. And there was one devotee there, and she was weeping copious tears, and Prabhupada came up to her and he was very concerned. And he said, what is the matter? And she said, oh Prabhupada, I'm not a devotee. I have no interest in devotional service. I'm so far away from, I have no interest in chanting. I'm just so fallen. And she was going on and on. Prabhupada put his finger under her chin like this. Give her a little chuck under the chin. He said, don't live with guilt. He said, just go on with your devotional service. That feeling of guilt is good, like everything in Krishna consciousness, if it's in moderation. A little bit is fine if it motivates you to do better service. If you indulge in it, then it'll stop you from doing your service. And what good is that? So rather than calling it guilt, I think awareness. This here, causeless knowledge. That knowledge you can substitute for guilt. Knowledge that I've come to this position by my own misdeeds in the past. This is simply the result of my own activity. What is that verse in 11th canto that says the devotee is always knowing that he should have gotten worse from Krishna, but goes on expecting the mercy of the Lord? And Mukti Sadayabak, what is that verse? How does it start? Tatenu kampa susamikshamano bunjana evatma kritam vibhakam didam namaste bunjana mukti sadai hride sadayabak. If you go on and not feeling guilty, but aware that, you know, I've done these things and this is the result, this is the consequence. But by the Lord's grace, reactions have been minimized, and now let me go on and do my service, always expecting the Lord's mercy. That's a much healthier attitude. You avoid all of that toxic condition of guilt. So that's true humility, is that you don't allow that to interfere with the service you have to do. Is that okay?
Yeah. One more question. You're talking about how some people don't expect to succeed in whatever they don't succeed because of that. Now, the new age idea is that whatever you expect, you will get it. So when we perform devotional service, do we expect that our rendering of service will lead us to spiritual advancement? Or should we just do the service without expecting even spiritual advancement? You also said that we should not make business with Krishna.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's called sometimes the law of attraction. In New Age parlance. I've looked at Bhagavad Gita. I don't find any verses like that in Bhagavad Gita. I've tried to. I don't see really that there's this idea that just by creating a positive frame of mind, therefore you create your own reality kind of thing. I understand the sentiment behind that, which is actually something similar to what we've been discussing. If you're always living in a negative frame of mind, then you'll not do anything. If you're thinking positively, then at least there's some chance you might be able to do something. What that thinking, however, does not take into consideration is what we're learning here from Srila Prabhupada, where he says, this is not possible by dry reasoning. It actually happens by the grace of the Almighty. Unless that law of positive thinking is coupled with an understanding that nothing happens without the will of the Lord, then it's simply another kind of trickery. Because otherwise, if it was just the law of attraction, everybody would be equally successful. Everybody would be equally wealthy. Everybody would be equally powerful and famous. Because everybody wants that. Isn't it the case? Everybody wants these things. So everyone's thinking positively. I'd like to. There are other factors, remote factors. Your own karmic behavior from previous lives might put a ceiling on your material success. So no matter how hard you think positively, you're going to hit that karmic ceiling. That's one factor that's not considered. Another is the Lord's grace. That maybe by thinking positively, you might have had some material result. But Krishna has other plans for you. We have to remain open to that as well. So there's a difference, you know. When what I was referring to was an understanding of the working of the mind. I mean, the mind takes a very, very big place in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna is giving Arjuna a lot of hints about the working of his mind, you know. And he's telling him, you've got these ideas about yourself. It's just like the air carries aromas, right? You have all these ideas about yourself that, you know, you're limited in this way, or, you know, you can't do this or you can't do that. And Arjuna says, yes, and I can't control those thoughts. Krishna says, yes, you can. Yes, you can. By proper practice and by determination, you can do it. So by being aware of the workings of the mind, how we tell ourselves these internal stories. I'll give you one more example, if I may. How we experience pain is influenced by the story we tell ourselves. Let's say a soldier is wounded in battle, a soldier shot in battle, and he's lying there wounded with a gunshot wound. The soldier is thinking, well, I'm not dead. I'm hurting, but I'm alive. I'm going to get an honorable discharge. Maybe they're going to give me a medal. I'm going to be a hero when I get back home. Maybe they'll send me to a hospital to recover and I'll meet some pretty nurse there. She's having all these positive thoughts. So when the medics arrive with morphine, they say, do you want some morphine for your pain? He'll say, no, give it to somebody who needs it more than me. He's not feeling that pain so much. Now take a situation of someone who's shot in a store by a robber is coming to hold. So the owner of the shop is lying on the floor thinking, my insurance isn't going to cover this. You're thinking, I'm going to be laid up at home recovering. No one's going to be able to mind my store. They're going to rob me blind. I'm going to go out of business. So the medics come, do you want some morphine? Oh, yes, please. Because he's feeling that pain more intensely, according to that internal story. So Krishna consciousness reforms our internal story by giving us a sense of our true identity. I am servant of Krishna. We have that to meditate on. I had this wonderful experience of visiting Bhaktivedanta Hospital yesterday. My gosh, what an amazing, amazing place. What are they doing there? They're helping patients change the internal story that they tell themselves. So they're not thinking, I'm a victim of disease, I'm a victim of trauma, of an accident. They're thinking, these wonderful physicians are helping me to understand, I'm spirit soul. I'm eternal. This body is going through this change, that change. So we change that internal story, and even it affects how we experience pain. You won't feel pain as much by that devotional practice. Anyway, am I going on too much here? It's okay. Oh, now they're coming in writing. Some of our friends were practicing Krishna consciousness for quite some time, but now due to some circumstances, they have stopped following Krishna consciousness. It is very difficult to bring them back. Please guide of what things we must keep in mind while dealing with them in order to bring them back. Question number two. Please share your memories of your initiation ceremony. Some friends were practicing for some time. Due to circumstances, they have stopped following. Well, let me give you my own life as an example, that there came a time when after 13 years living in temples, I distanced myself from living in temples. And I think two things were the hardest thing for me of all. two things were very hard. So if your friends have been practicing Krishna consciousness, you can understand that there are two things that are probably very hard for them. One is the quality of sound. The quality of sound. When you're living in a temple environment, the sound is so pure. Everything that you're hearing on the loudspeakers, in the temple room, the classes, the japa, the quality of sound is so beautiful and so inspiring. When you move away from that environment, the first thing that happens is that the sound quality goes way down. Way, way, way down. And it hurts. It physically hurts. It hurts to be in an environment where the sound is all material all the time. So they're hurting. Your friends are hurting. I don't know who this was from, but your friends are hurting because they've had that experience of living in such a beautiful transcendental environment. The second thing I know from my own experience was that I felt so sad because I didn't hear so often from my friends. It's almost like it was embarrassing or something that I wasn't living in the temple anymore. And I didn't hear from them. These are people I had spent so many years with, and all of a sudden, like it disappeared or something. You know, where did they go? You know. So the other thing you can do is just continue to be their friends. Just be their friends. I mean, that's the answer to your second question. What do I remember about my initiation ceremony? I remember that I was being given a place among these beautiful friends. It was in London, 1970. Gurdas performed the fire ceremony. And I received my initiation by mail. You know, I remember my mom showed up. I had been a student, and I gave all my clothes to the temple. So she comes, because I was getting married, she comes and this is strange. I think I know this clothing, you know, it's all these clothes hanging up in the hallway. I said, where does... So, and then... So I give everything away. So my Guru Dakshin, my gift to Prabhupada was some socks. That's all. We went out, we collected some Lakshmi, and I bought him some socks. And I sent him socks. And he said, my dear Joshua, thank you for the gift of the socks, which I have put in my drawer for future use. And I am very happy to accept you as my disciple. Your initiated name is Yogeshwar Das. And he said, in your letter to me, you have expressed appreciation for your senior devotee, God brothers and God sisters. This is a very good quality. Continue to seek shelter of your senior devotee, God brothers and God sisters, and this will serve you very well. So now, part of the service that I do back in New York is I try to keep contact with the devotees who have gone away from Krishna consciousness. I call them like once a week. I have a list of people. I call them. And sometimes I'll go and visit and bring prasadam or whatever. So whoever it is who gave me this note, be a good friend. Be a friend. And they'll never forget you, you know. Never forget you. Don't judge them. If they think that you're judging them, then it's finished. Don't judge them. They'll come back. They can't stay away for long. Eventually, everybody comes back. Once you've been in Krishna, your material, once you've been here, your material life's finished. You can never go back to that for very long. Maybe a little while you try to fool yourself into forgetting, you know, oh, now I'm enjoying, you know. No, I'm not. No. Just be a good friend, that's all.
So, it's okay? Should we stop here? Should we stop? Or go on? So what time is it now?
Huh? One or two questions more, okay. Hare Krishna, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Bol.